Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Win with eggheads and African Americans.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
We cannot win with eggheads and African Americans.
I'm satisfied as long as I get my kiss.
We cannot win with eggheads and African Americans.
How do you like your toast in the morning?
We cannot win with eggheads and African Americans. We cannot win with eggheads and African Americans.
As long as I get
that, of course. Of course, no one knows who he is. It's some guy named Paul something or other who used to work for Clinton, who is on CNN, and he says that Obama cannot win simply based on eggheads and African-Americans. And he's right. He can't win with eggheads and African-Americans. Now, the question is why Hillary is still in the race. The answer is because she's not a quitter. And, of course, she probably really hates Obama. I suspect there's great hatred between the two camps. But this eggheads and African-Americans line that came off a show yesterday is really astonishing. Begala said that the party needs working class whites in order to win. I love the word working class. That unto itself is rather elitist. What does working class mean? I work. I'm white. Does that make me working class white or am I an egghead? You know, I don't like these phrases, working class. What do they imagine working class is? A factory whistle, toot toot? What they mean is they can't win with white. Without white people. Now, since 91% or 92% of black people voted for Obama in the primaries in the last few in North Carolina, why isn't it fair to say that this is going to be a racially divisive election? And it will be. There's no question about it. Now, listen to Hillary Clinton on her support by whites. Listen to this one.
There was just an AP article posted that found how Senator Obama's support among working
Wait a minute. Hold it. Stop this. I'm not. Do you hear a tinkling in the background? Does anyone hear this? I swear to you, I hear water running in the background, and it doesn't sound like a sink. If this is what I think it is, I'm embarrassed to run it. I'm going to run it again for a few seconds. But if you hear what I hear, this is amazing. People do these things, you know. Don't tell me you've never talked on a telephone while in the restroom. It sounds to me like water is running. Listen to this.
Hardworking Americans, white Americans, is weakening again.
Maybe I've watched too many spy movies. I don't know, but I hear something in the background.
We're supporting me, and in
it's water.
I was running even with him, and
all right, turn it off. That's all. You know, there's a saying that patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel. I would change it to the phrase politicians are the last. I would say that politics is the last refuge of the scoundrel. Now, there's another most astonishing soundbite that I must play for you in the Savage Nation. And that is the strange McCain was on a comedian show, a comedian who was off the air when a fat, ugly guy with brains couldn't write for him. A man who did the absolute worst. Academy Awards presentation in history, a man who is obviously incapable of working without a fat, ugly, intelligent man writing for him. So McCain goes on this guy's show, and I want you to hear this astonishing reference to Chairman Mao, which he refers to Chairman Mao, by the way, who was responsible for killing 60 million of his own people. John McCain, who was tortured in a Vietnamese prison, speaks of Chairman Mao in a positive way as though it's a joke. Listen to 19.
For a while there, I was reminded of the words of Chairman Mao, who said, it's always darkest before it's totally black. You remember that? Remember Chairman Mao's words?
I remember getting that in one of my fortune cookies as well. Listen to me.
Do you think that's funny? I'm really getting frightened here. Is this guy a Manchurian candidate? Can anyone explain to me? This is like the Stockholm Syndrome. He's tortured by the Vietnamese, who are being funded and supplied by the Chinese. Chairman Mao was the enemy, the enemy of all enemies, and he speaks of him in a positive manner. This is odd. Now, for those of you who watch The Manchurian Candidate or know what the Stockholm Syndrome is, I would suspect that you think very carefully about what I'm saying. Play it again, 19.
For a while there, I was reminded of the words of Chairman Mao, who said, it's always
darkest before it's totally black. You remember?
All right, we got it. Right. I don't want to hear the jerk. The jerk I don't want to hear. Now, we have other stories here in the Savage Nation. The phone number is here, 1-800-449-8255. Some of the other stories that we're covering, I'm trying to sound like a normal person in the media. Some of the other stories we're covering. I don't cover stories. That's not it. I'm not a journalist. I leave that to the people who like to fake things. I'm a commentator. It's different than being a journalist. Commentator's up front and telling you it's his opinion, and he tries to convince you why his opinion is valid. A journalist pretends he doesn't have to convince you because it's objective, when, of course, we all know there's no such thing as objectivity in journalism. It's all subjective. Just what story you select and what stories you choose not to cover indicates subjectivity. You know what I'm saying? Yes, no, talking to myself. Here's an interesting story on my own website here. A kid tried to body pierce himself. He's almost dead now from a staph infection. A teenager considering do-it-yourself body piercing at home has a drug-resistant staph infection that nearly cost him his life. It's terrible. A real genius, this one. Several surgeries to remove infected parts of his knees and hips. Now he faces the prospect of heart surgery and a long course of antibiotics. The father said Wednesday that the ordeal started April 8th when Zeke tried to pierce his lower lip while he was at home with the flu and bronchitis. Unable to push the post through, he resorted to using a needle from a first aid kit before his mother stopped him. A week later, Zeke went to the emergency room feverish. An early diagnosis suggested viral infection. Then he's correctly diagnosed with staph infection and a bad one. Zeke had acquired methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, a strain that is resistant to some antibiotics. So, I mean, this is unbelievable. Why would anyone pierce themselves to begin with? Then there's another article for those of you who are concerned about the overmedication of your child, and you should be worried, really very worried indeed. It's a vast conspiracy by the medico-pharmaceutical establishment. And that is, they found another boy who committed suicide after taking a new allergy drug prescription. It certainly cured his allergies, though. That's the important thing to remember. The doctor and the drug companies would say, yes, but his allergies have been cured. The kid's dead. And that's, of course, why the allergies are cured. And that goes into their data. The largest percentage of children who take these drugs have their allergy problems clear up because they die. Is it funny? Well, it's funny to me. It's funny that you believe anything that a doctor tells you these days when it comes to children. Most of them are drug peddlers. Let me explain this to you. Years and years ago, I was told that the lowest income doctors were the pediatricians. And the reason was is because they didn't perform many procedures and they rarely prescribe drugs. The reason they rarely prescribe drugs is because children shouldn't have drugs prescribed unless it's a life-threatening illness. So pediatricians were like the saints of medicine. And then what happened was, the drug detailers went around to them and said, look, we've got all sorts of new illnesses you can peddle, ADHD, this and that. We have a whole new host of drugs you can peddle. Think about how, you know, lucrative it'll be for you if you can get tons of kids in here for these fake diseases. And here we are now with children getting sick and dying from these drugs for conditions that, A, don't need drugs because the conditions don't exist. Or when they do give them drugs, the kids are committing suicide. You know that suicide is in the top three causes of death amongst children. Did you know that? I bet you don't know that. That's right. Yeah. Well, anyway, read Healing Children Naturally. I believe in it. I wrote it because I believe in it. I used it when raising my children. And I certainly don't disavow all of Western medicine. Please, let's not be children about it. But to rush to a drug at the merest hint of a problem is a disaster for your child. Now, I don't want to talk about medicine at all. I want to talk about what the difference is between a cyclone and a hurricane. The most popular question I've gotten over the last few days, the minute I return right here on the Savage Nation. Go ahead. Savage.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Boiled or fried,
I'm satisfied as long as I get my kiss.
We cannot win with eggheads and African Americans.
Your toast in the morning.
I like mine with a hug.
We cannot win with eggheads and African Americans.
It's a funny statement when you think about it. All right. Begala is so out of touch and so useless to either campaign, he doesn't even realize that most people don't know what an egghead is. It's a phrase from the 1950s when Adlai Stevenson ran. He's again talking to eggheads only. He's talking again to the in crowd in the media and eggheads themselves who know what an egghead is. An egghead was a reference to guys with, like, basically pointy heads, like Adlai Stevenson, a creep who ran in the 50s against Eisenhower and lost in a huge manner. And he was promoted, by the way, by the liberal press, just as Obama's being promoted and will lose as well, unless, of course, McCain takes off his masks and we see his mask. I almost said masks, blah, blah, blah. All right, so people keep saying to me, Mike, what's the difference between a cyclone and a hurricane? And what I thought I remembered, it turns out to be true. Fundamentally, it's the same thing, but it refers to the region in which it occurs. For example, a hurricane is a violent wind, circular movement, found in the West Atlantic Ocean, okay? Cyclone is a violent tropical storm in which the air moves very fast in a circular direction. But again, notice the emphasis is tropical storm. Typhoon is a violent wind which has a circular movement found in the West Pacific, so way out in the area of, let's say, the Celebes or a typhoon. Well, Joseph Conrad wrote Typhoon, so South China Sea, typhoon. Cyclone, tropical storm, cyclone. Hurricane, West Atlantic Ocean. Fundamentally, it's the same system, so far as I know, and I'm not an expert on weather. I would have to consult a real expert such as Al Sharpton in order to understand this because although he didn't go to college, he knows more about weather and weather patterns and global warming, I suspect, than I do. And that's why Al Gore bought him off with a lot of money before he tried to close New York down and didn't succeed. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com, website. You're the caller. What do you want to do today? There's another story that I want to cover, not even reluctantly, but I want to cover it deliciously. And that is this. There's a despicable human being, in my opinion, out here on the West Coast, who has been taken off the radio for a number of months now after it was reported that he transmitted child pornography. He used to be the most vehemently anti-American talk radio host out here in the Bay Area. He salivated to put down the flag into the military. He hated the police. He was an ex-priest who put down religion. And he was a darling of the, I was going to say the syphilitics in the San Francisco area, but I wouldn't want to debase syphilitics. He was the darling of the far left in the San Francisco area. Anyway, the guy's off the air. I don't know why he's still permitted to have his children in his house. But tomorrow it's going to be a big story. And that is that he's going to plead guilty to child pornography charges and that he faces at least 5 years in federal prison, according to people who have studied this. That's after his lawyer said he was only researching a book. And what I have for you is the new – do we have the new report? Let's see the new report.
Former KGO radio host Bernie Ward is expected to change his plea today on federal child pornography charges. KGO radio is quoting an unnamed close friend of Ward as saying he will plead guilty to downloading child pornography and distributing those images by computer. Ward has claimed he did so because he was doing research for a book. ABC 7 legal analyst Dean Johnson says unless Ward's attorneys have struck some sort of deal with prosecutors, he's likely to receive a minimum of 5 years in federal prison.
Play Bernadette, and I'll tell you why we have to play Bernadette by the Four Tops to go with this story.
They want you because...
Turn it off, please. It means nothing. It's not even funny. It should have been with a voice. Yeah. The reason we're playing Bernadette is the Bernard Ward, I suspect, if he's going to be put in the federal prison system for child pornography and such, is going to have to either lose a great deal of weight, take up weightlifting, or change his name to either Bernice or Bernadette before he goes into prison. The only way the man is going to survive would be as Bernice, I would think, in the sense that I don't think even people who transmit child pornography are seen as, top of the heap there in prison. Now, we hope that he, you know, comes through it fine. We hope that he gets a false microphone and a false little radio studio to play with, as they give prisoners virtually everything they want out here in California. They have TV studios to make movies. They weightlift all day long. They watch color television. They distribute condoms I'm surprised they haven't given them condominiums to go with the condoms. So I wouldn't doubt that the California penal system wouldn't provide this radio guy, a false radio studio that to keep him entertained for a number of years. But what we did for you was we looked up the original case. It was, the story was astonishing of what he actually did in terms of the fantasies, you know, fantasy. Now, we all have sexual fantasies. All human beings do. I know that. That's fine. And what we fantasize is our business, no one else's. However, this is amazing. Although he's not a child pornographer, and I agree with that, and he's not a molester, I agree with that. And although he may have been role-playing, and I agree with that, something is wrong with the picture when you start fantasizing about having sexual relations with your own son and your own daughter. Now, I read that transcript. I was stunned by this. What's even more stunning is that the FBI has not removed his children from his home. I don't understand that part of it. I really don't. It may just be fantasizing, but something's wrong with this picture. And we're going to play for you all of the early, juicier pieces of the case so that you can judge for yourself whether liberalism is a mental disorder that can be cured or whether liberalism, the mental disorder, is incurable and they should all be put in prison. KNEW, Ray, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for your great work. This story is absent on network news. I was listening to the local station that Bernie Ward used to broadcast on, and it's all apologizing and justifying because, after all, this man did lots of great work, you know, around.
Oh, yes, that's right. This was just a slight blemish on his career.
And who are we?
Well, it's like the concentration camp guards in Germany. That was only a small part of their overall life in the Third Reich. I mean, they went to parties together. They took care of their children. You know, they had nice – they went bowling. They brewed beer. They were in the beer club, the bowling club, the gardening club, the horticulture club, the Alpine Mountain Club, the hunting club. And this gassing of the Jews and beating them with truncheons was just a small part of their life.
Michael, there were people calling and saying that this could happen to any of us if we just took the wrong picture of our children in the bathtub. It's disgusting how people are justifying.
Oh, you heard that on the radio today? That's what the people were saying?
Yes, I heard it on Bernie Ward's old station, which is a ABC flagship. And the
no, I know. It's a great station. I have nothing against the station. Of course, you can't control what people say. But of course his supporters are going to say that. They'll justify anything. Liberalism is a mental disorder, and now I think it's incurable. I think it's incurable.
Savage.
Follow, Sexberry asks Ward for more pictures. He complies. Then police get a search warrant for Ward's AOL account. Email sent and received by Vincent Leo had pictures attached. An investigator writes, several of the photographs depicted children engaged in or simulating sexual acts with adults or other children. The ages of the children in the pictures, 4 to 17 years old.
4, wow. Even a liberal might be shocked by a 4-year-old. I wouldn't think a 10 or an 8-year-old would bother them. You know, after all, it's just a lifestyle choice to a lib. You know, why not do it in the road? If it feels good, do it. But I think that if 4, even a liberal would say, well, maybe that's a little too much. I could see they would say cutting it off at 7. Austin, Texas. Sean, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I was just calling to point out the fact that Bernie gets to keep his kids when there's lots of charges showing that he, you know, has these weird things going on, but meanwhile, the FLDS sect members get their kids taken away in a hoax phone call, which now...
That's right. That's right. The polygamy cult with false charges, bogus phone call, fascist police raid, children taken away. I understand. I hear you. I understand the travesty of justice, the violation of the Constitution in that case. I hear you, and thanks for the call. Do you want to talk about the Three Stooges, McCain, the Egghead, and the other one? I forget her name, Hillary. Or do you want to talk about other topics? Let's see. Cops. 10-year-old gives birth after rape by illegal alien. Would you like to hear that story? I know they all come here to work. Oh, yeah. Well, how do you explain this one? Police began investigating after medical officials reported a pregnant child, and Guadalupe Gutierrez Juarez, age 37, was arrested the same day. Turns out he allegedly raped a 10-year-old, and she gave birth on top of it all. That's amazing. See, that's the future of America right there. The future of America can be seen in this story. The essence, the kernel of the future of America. is that we become a sort of appendage of Mexico mentally and demographically. Inside Super Liberals online chats, we have the actual original news report from the TV station on michaelsavage.com for those of you who are into the salacious. Islamic group says that the storming of a mosque sends the wrong message. Duh. As part of a recent emergency preparedness drill, law enforcement personnel, you see. Did you hear the story? As part of a recent emergency preparedness drill in South Central Illinois, law enforcement and personnel stormed a fake mosque where radical gunmen were holding hostages. They were playing a part, and the building wasn't really a mosque, but that bothers the, here we go, Council on American-Islamic Relations, Sieg Heil. You see, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, Sieg Heil, opposes the stereotyping of Muslims as radicals. As you well know, no Muslim is a radical, ever. It's impossible to ever use a fake mosque in this type of drill, say, people that care, because it sends the wrong message to law enforcement. According to Ahmed Rehab, I think Ahmed Rehab ought to consider Rehab, executive director of CARE's Chicago chapter. As you well know, this is the same group that has tried to drive me out of the radio business. For those of you who've donated money, thank you. And for those of you who are thinking of it, go to michaelsavage.com. Very soon I'm expecting a ruling from the judge in round one, but I don't have a ruling for you yet. That's an interesting story. You should read it. I guess some federal officials have not yet been bamboozled by CARE. They're not afraid of the Islamists amongst us. Not, of course, CARE. They're not Islamists. I mean, but the officials themselves are not afraid of Islamists amongst us. And that, of course, is why they build a fake mosque and storm it with fake radicals inside, because they suspect that if there's a terrorist event, it wouldn't be coming from a nunnery. It wouldn't be like, all right, Johnson won, break into the nunnery. See if you can get the chief sister, Johnson. Is that what you want them to do, set up a nunnery and break into a nunnery? They're not going to do it. They're not George Bush. They're not John McCain. They're not Hillary. They're not Obama. These police know who the problem is going to come from. Everyone does. KNEW, Robin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I want to let you know that Bernie pleaded guilty this afternoon to three counts consolidated into one of transmitting child pornography. His sentence was delayed until August because, among the reasons, he wants to attend his son's high school graduation.
I'm sorry. That was a spontaneous guffaw.
Can you believe it?
A man who transmits child pornography wants to attend his son's high school graduation? That would be real good for the son.
Son that he was speaking about sexually in those emails.
You just got the news, came out just now, Robin?
It came out about half an hour ago.
So they plea bargained down a delayed sentencing until August. So they think that we'll forget the case by then. Is that it?
Probably.
Oh, my God. You know, the law is an ass. Samuel Johnson said that. I didn't. And they're manipulating the law, in my opinion. This is a disgrace. You know, the American people need justice. They can't put up with this forever. How do you feel about that, Robin? Do you think it's appropriate for a man who's just pled guilty to transmitting child pornography to attend the high school graduation for his son?
Well, of course not, but he is a liberal Democrat. Michael, if this were you, you would be in jail right now.
That's right. This is coming from Barbara Boxer, who he used to work for. She pulled strings at the U.S. Attorney's Office, as sure as I'm sitting here, to make certain that they gave him a slap on the wrist. This is a miscarriage of justice, as far as I'm concerned. Do you think the sentence... Well, we don't know what the sentence is. Do you think the sentence will be appropriate, or do you think he's going to just skate?
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets probation.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll make a little commitment. If he gets probation, I'll have 5,000 people outside Barbara Box's loft. Does that work for you?
Count me in, Michael.
Okay, 5,000 people outside Barbara Box's loft demanding equal justice for equal people. Unbelievable. Where did that just come out on? Did anyone see that? I didn't see it. I got my listeners have to do the job that I don't have a local. Huh? It came. Oh, see, I have callers who are my producer. I love it that the callers are producing my show for me. Bernie Waters. Oh, is this a new report? Where did it come from? Bernie Waters spending more time out of the house lately. This guy is the anti-conservative. Let's put it to you that way. As a condition of bail for the federal child pornography charges he faces, the ex-talk show host is still confined to his home with electronic surveillance. He can't even go into his backyard. But Ward's attorney filed motions and the judge agreed. Listen to this. To allow him to attend church on Sundays. This is a man who puts down the church. He'll also be allowed to travel to Lake Natomas this month to watch his college-age daughter compete in the National Rowing Championship. I'm gagging. And he'll be allowed to attend his son's high school graduation. If you were his son, would you want a father who was indicted for child pornography charges to attend your graduation? Do you think it's appropriate to have a man who has been indicted on federal child pornography charges to watch his college-age daughter compete in the National Rowing Championships? I'm telling you, I'd feel like the ick factor. Is he also, as part of this, allowed to bring a camera? So for his album in prison, can he take pictures of the other girls in the boats with his daughter? Is that, you know, the law is an ass. This is unbelievable. This is sickening. It's demented. It's not because I hate the guy. I don't even know the guy. It's true he stood in my way when I began in radio because he knew I was, you know, like a 1,000-watt bulb, and he had 2 watts, like a dim bulb running off a generator. And he knew that I would pass him by. Okay, understand that, what jealousy is. And it's a competitive field. It's not that reason. It's because of all of his years of hating the military, hating the police, hating the church, hating the flag, hating everything that I love, and loving everything I hate. That's why. Oh, it's what a world we live in. It's so amazing. And now, you know, what would happen to you? Tell me what would happen to you. Tell me what would happen to you if you were charged with this case. As Ward entered the court, he was greeted with hugs from priests in brown robes. I can make some comments on that right now, but it's a family show. Why brown robes? Why would they have to tell me the color of the robe? What does that have to do with anything? May 8th, former radio talk show host Bernice Ward, who pleaded not guilty to 3 counts of distributing and receiving child pornography in December, changed that plea Thursday in court. Ward pleaded guilty to 1 count that he distributed child porno. As part of the plea deal, the 2 other child porn counts were dropped. He said in court on Thursday, I engaged in exchanging an image of a minor engaging in sexually explicit activity in December of 2004 via the internet or computer. As Bernice Ward entered the court, he was greeted with hugs from priests in brown robes. He was released following the plea. We don't know if the priests in brown robes were allowed to go home with him or not. He is scheduled to be back in court August 28th to be sentenced. Technically, the plea will be entered on that date. NBC 11's Cheryl Hurd said the delay in the plea was due to health problems. Oh, another ploy, in my opinion. Ploity, 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 ploity. If the guilty plea had been officially submitted Thursday, Bernice Ward, could have been sent to prison immediately. The minimum sentence Ward could receive is 5 years in prison. The former host, well, we should say hostess, appeared in U.S. District Court in San Francisco 1 month before the case was scheduled to go to trial. In other words, they did a plea deal. He was going to go to trial. He could have had 15 to 20, okay? So he figured he'll take the best deal he can get now and see if he can shop it to Feinstein next, if he hasn't done it already. And maybe even by that time, Obama will be president, and he'll be given the Presidential Medal of Freedom rather than serving any time. Under the new administration, he'll be given the Presidential Medal of Freedom for showing how brave he was. Bernice Ward allegedly sent the Oakdale woman pictures, blah, 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 with children now as young as 4 years old. This is, it is what it is. If you want to hear the details, go to michaelsavage.com. We have it. That's all. No one's calling on this. They never know who he is. They never heard of him. But it's a story that's a big, big story. You'd be reading about it if he was a conservative. Let me ask you something. If a guy who was a conservative in talk radio for years, loud, vociferous conservative, was indicted on federal child pornography charges, do you think it would be in the press tonight? Do you think it would be on CNN, Fox, blah, blah, blah? Well, you know it would be. They would not stop playing it over and over again. They'd be snickering and playing stories about it. But, of course, if you're a liberal, you know, you get by with a little help from your friends. You get high with a little help from your friends. So that's why the Beatles wrote that song a number of years ago. And they really do protect each other. You know, it's one big sorority. So that's why I'm doing this, because I don't really want to talk about McCain and McShmain and this. I can't take it. I don't want to talk about anything, truthfully. I don't want to talk about anything. I want to just talk about me. A, I have a headache. I think I'm going to have to move to L.A. That's what's going on. Do you know that my allergies were almost non-existent in Los Angeles, and I came back, I almost died to the San Francisco area? Go explain that to me. I could explain it to you. You say, oh, L.A.'s polluted and the San Francisco area is pristine. Yeah, pristine. What you don't understand is that this area is infested with pollen from pine trees. And I suspect that it's the micropollen from the pines that are all over the hills, you know, being coastal, that causes some of the worst allergies in the United States of America. I swear to God, you know, my plane landed at Oakland, the private port. I get in the car. I had no allergies in L.A. I was there for like a half a week for my son's birthday party and to do some meetings and whatnot. I broadcast from there. I get in the car. I'm still good. The minute the car approached the San Rafael bridge, I started to feel my head like someone was clamping it down with a vise. So I'm telling you right now, I'm thinking of moving down to L.A. Just get rid of this sick, demented area. Just get out of here. Maybe I'm allergic to the mentality here after this story. I can see where I want to go. It's filled with psychopaths. And when you got such political clout that a senator can go and pull the strings in the FBI through the U.S. Attorney's Office like this, it's enough to make you feel like screaming, you know? And I will. I'll go outside her. I will promise you right now, if they give this guy a suspended sentence in August, I'll bring 5,000 people outside Senator Feinstein's, Senator Boxer's office, and Nancy Pelosi's office. We're not going to stand for another miscarriage of justice. It's not going to happen. Period. Okay? We want equal justice before the law. 1-800-449-8255. What do you want to talk about, for God's sakes? Call this number right now, or I will not return. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Discusses group sex he had at an infamous porn theater in San Mateo. Then, nearly an hour into the conversation, he brings up photographs. I love trading pictures. Sex fairy answers, and why haven't I gotten any pics, slave? Send me some. Ward sends several pictures, one of a woman and two children. Ward describes her as a mother in her late 30s. She's topless. He says the naked boy is 14, that the girl wearing clothes is 12. They're all touching in a sexual way. Sex fairy writes, BRB, be right back. A half hour later, she's on the phone with police, reporting Bernie Ward for child porn.
I guess she's the evil one. There's a local website here called Sifgate, and you should see the biased reporting in this one. Unbelievable. So they just posted the story on Sifgate. Ward admits to child porn, and listen to what they call him. You're not going to believe the story. Wait, the headline is this. This is amazing to me. Prominent radio talk show host and reporter concedes to distributing explicit images of children. Who said he was prominent? What made him prominent? The only part of him that was prominent was his stomach. Other than that, there was no prominence in this man. Of course, the only thing he's prominent for now is sort of child pornography. But to let a man who has been indicted for this attend his daughter's rowing competition and his son's high school graduation is beyond comprehension. Who's Judge Walker? Chief U.S. District Judge Vaughn Walker. This is unbelievable to me. You tell me there's no politics involved in this, I would say you're a liar or an idiot. This should be investigated, by the way. Vaughn Walker should be investigated to see who was involved with him. This is crazy. I don't care if you're a liberal or a conservative. This is sick. Don't you people have any sense of honor about a thing like this? Jeff, KSTE Sacramento. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing today?
What's on your mind, sir?
Well, I just want to let you know I'm a card-carrying liberal that I am disgusted with this as well. I'd be one of your 5,000 outside barber boxes office with you.
Well, I'm glad some liberal understands that you have to draw a line somewhere.
I don't want you lumping all those liberals together. You know, the liberals you're talking about, same as calling conservatives, the same as neocons.
All right, thanks for the call. Good. Well, maybe it'll be 10,000. If they move this to August when most of you are out on vacation and they plea it out to zero, we're going to protest it in advance. And what Al Sharpton couldn't do in New York, we will do in San Francisco, I can guarantee you. Paul in Oregon, Jeremy, KXL, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I was just calling to say that Mr. Ward being able to be around his kids, go be around other children's kids or other people's children is proof that liberalism is an incurable disease, and they all need to be locked up.
Well, I'd like to know why the parents of the daughters who are going to be in the rowing competition aren't entitled to voice their opinion as to whether they want someone who traded in child pornography to be at a rowing competition with girls.
And not to mention all the parents of the kids that are going to graduate with his son. He probably goes to a pretty large high school.
Well, I don't know what high school he goes to, but it seems odd to me that the son would even want his father there. Doesn't that strike you as bizarre that a son wouldn't say, Dad, you know what, I understand you're in trouble and I love you, but please don't come to the graduation. I really can't handle it. Unless the child's brain has been so warped by this man that he doesn't even think his father did anything wrong. Okay? Is that possible?
That's probably a possibility, because it seems like it'd be pretty traumatic for him.
Where is Child Protective Services in this case? Why haven't they debriefed these children to see if they weren't in some way harmed, mentally if not other ways, by this ill individual? I think the man is sick, by the way, rather than evil. I think he's more sick than evil, incidentally.
Not there.
And I'm not into hurting sick people, but I'm not into letting sick people hurt children either. Thank you for the call. What else can you say about it? I mean, what are you going to do? Tell me what you can say about it. And if you really want to, you can't believe the kind of fantasizing. But in addition to the fantasizing, the guy went to a male adult theater and I read the transcript, and I don't know if it was fantasy or not. He said he let people strip him. I can't even finish the sentence. And humiliate him and abuse him in the male theater. Then he'd come back to the radio station after that and rail against conservatives. I mean, look, psychologically, you can pretty much figure that one out. He didn't want God or Father or the police controlling him in any way. And he was ashamed of himself and hated himself. And as I say, in that regard, he's a sick man who needs very intensive treatment. But I'm concerned about the children. And I don't know, I do know why Child Protective Services wouldn't go near it. It's because they were controlled by the liberal establishment, while homeschoolers in the state of California would probably have their doors broken in by the Gestapo out here if they ever did anything like this.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Time for Ward now, and a grim outlook for his future.
If these internet conversations are accurate, if they're truthful, if they correctly reflect what Bernie said, Bernie is potentially in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
There's so much more in the police report that we can't discuss. It's just too graphic. Federal prosecutors declined to be interviewed for today's report. We've been unable so far to contact the woman known as Sex Fairy. I did reach Bernie Ward directly today. He says he would like to tell his side of the story, but he has to take his attorney's advice not to talk.
Well, today, the man who said he was not guilty and whose lawyer said he was not guilty, of course a lawyer's supposed to do that, today pled guilty to one count of distribution of child porn. Now, look, this story would have very little interest outside the Bay Area, because it's being blocked. It was not reported by any of the major media when it came out because he's a super left-winger. Military hater, police hater, flag hater, family hater, church hater. Consequently, his friends inside the media have covered for him, as you well know. While the conservative guy who touched an undercover officer's foot in the stall, that's been going on for nine months now, which, of course, is number one, none of their darn business, as far as I'm concerned. And number two, it was two consenting adults, even if it would have occurred. This is another story. Don't you liberals have any conscience? Don't you think there's a line that you shouldn't cross? Is there nothing that would embarrass you or make you feel icky about a person? Is everything Republican and conservative evil to you and everything else is good? That means you're a warped individual. Don't you think it's disgusting for a man to transmit child pornography and more disgusting to fantasize about your own children in internet discussions with another person? Doesn't that indicate something to you that you find has a very high ick factor? So today now they play another trick on the public. The judge, by the way, who was appointed by George Bush's father. Did you hear this? The judge was appointed by Bush Sr. Lets the lawyer do a plea, but instead of sentencing him today, they delay it until August. And they give the guy the extraordinary right to go to his daughter's rowing competition and to go to his son's high school graduation. I've never heard of this. This is an extraordinary plea bargain. It's incomprehensible, by the way. KNEW, Bill, what do you think about this turn of events?
Well, I think that George Bush has to pardon him because that would be the political correct thing for him to do. It would not be possible for Obama, should he get elected, nor Hillary, if she gets elected, to give him any kind of award. He must be pardoned first.
Well, why do you think George Bush would pardon him?
Well, he has to because George Bush has been being purported to be so that it makes the liberals sick, but in fact, you and I both know he's not, so this gives him an ample opportunity.
George Bush is a super liberal. George Bush said that a Mexican rapist who raped and tortured a girl over 15 years ago, and she's been dead longer than this guy's been on death row, disagreed with the Texas Supreme Court and said the guy deserved another trial in the world court. That's who George Bush has become.
I understand who George Bush is, and just as well as you do, but I'm saying that since his father appointed this judge in this case, it would be the politically correct thing for him to do, as Bill Clinton did to so many of our own constitutional enemies.
Well, there would be no consequences for Bush, would there, if he pardoned him? I don't think his wife will ever run for office, do you? Yeah, you think there's a chance that... what is George Bush's wife's name? I'm sorry, I'm not disrespecting her. I don't remember her name. What is it? I forgot it. Laura. There's no chance Laura would want to be a president.
No.
You know, she's a different kind of woman. She's a lady as opposed to a vulture. Thanks for the call. Does anyone out there think that this talk show host deserves no sentence at all? I'd like to hear your rationale. I'm serious. I'm not going to ridicule you. I'll give you your airtime. Show me how the mind works, the mind that would say this man doesn't deserve any jail time. He suffered enough. Explain it to me. Las Vegas, Nevada. John, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I'll tell you what, I'm a retired San Francisco police officer who, as soon as I retired, I moved down to Las Vegas just to get away from Bernie Ward and his ilk, Mike. And
uh-huh.
I'll tell you, he deserves nothing but jail time. That hypocrite, that sweating hypocrite, would never give anyone else a break when they'd call his show. He would never believe anyone else. So when he finally gets caught with his cookies or his fingers in the cookie jar, I say nail him. He would never give anyone a break.
I think he got caught with his cookies in his finger jar.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm so wound up about this, I can't even talk right, Mike. But, yeah, I'm pretty worried.
Well, wait a minute. Are you an SFPD officer or a detective former?
I was an officer. I did 23 years. And
what a great department it used to be. I don't know what happened. We now have a police chief whose hat falls off her head. They can't even find a hat small enough to fit in her head.
I was born and raised in San Francisco, and I know...
Oh, my God. No, the morale in the police department is at the lowest ebb in its history. Do you know that?
Oh, I know that. Well, look who they got as a chief, and look at the mayor.
Yeah, Heather Fung. They can't find a hat small enough for her. I understand they're trying to modify a Cub Scout hat to fit her.
Look at the mayor. He was caught messing around with his best friend's buddy's wife.
Well, in San Francisco, that's a badge of honor.
Oh, I know it is. It's just nothing but a bunch of scumbags up there. I'm so happy to be away from that cesspool quite a bit.
Why? Why? Las Vegas is better?
Well, in a way it is, people are a little more honest. It's a little more conservative. And quite frankly, people will say hello to you down here. They have a nice way about them.
Is that really? I mean, I don't know. I've been to Vegas a lot of times. And, yeah, the people are different in a certain way. Now, of course, prostitution is legal there. I mean, on the other side of the coin. But I don't know that that's here nor there. I don't think child pornography is legal in Las Vegas. Look, John, you and I both know there's a line that people don't cross, and it doesn't matter what their political orientation is, and that line has been crossed here. What I'd like to know is how this judge has the audacity to permit this man to wait until August for sentencing, number one, and number two, to permit him to leave his home detention, his electronic braceleting, as it were, to go to a child's high school rowing competition. Isn't that bizarre, John?
It is, Mike, and I'll tell you what, if I was his kid, I wouldn't want him anywhere near my rowing competition or my graduation. He's an embarrassment.
Well, this is the question of the day, John.
Go ahead.
Let's be real. You're a boy, 15, 16. Your father's admitted to child pornography charges. Would you want him at your graduation? The answer is your instincts would say no if you were a normal kid. Therefore, this child's brain has been altered by the father. He probably doesn't think it was such a bad thing. And I am telling you, Child Protective Services has failed us again. They only go after homeschoolers and conservatives. You know that, and I know that.
That's correct. Can't
argue with
that.
Oh, how sick. The whole country's sick. I can't take it anymore. I don't know. I may leave. I can't do this anymore. I can't take it. I can't deal with it anymore. It's too insane. The country is warped. It's warped. It's upside down. You want to talk about this? WTNT, let's go across the country, see what people in Washington, D.C. say. Harvey, welcome to the Savage Nation from the heartland of K Street. What's on your mind?
Michael, you've listened to Bernie over the years. You know what a bully he is, right?
Okay. Yes.
You've got to believe these kids have been bullied by this bully. Now,
you think the father has bulldozed them into thinking he's a good guy?
Has he ever not bullied anybody that you've ever experienced? This guy's probably bullied these kids into making them let him attend these events. If Child Protective Services doesn't interview these children to determine whether or not they've been bullied, then they're out of their minds. You've listened to them.
I think there should be a citizen's arrest of the head of Child Protective Services. Somebody has to stand up for decency and family values. Somebody has to go to the governor and say, this is an outrage. We demand that the children of Bernie Ward be interviewed.
There's something seriously wrong in California, Michael. I do not grasp this problem. I cannot see this. We know what he is. He's a knee-jerk liberal. Let me tell you why he doesn't like you, Michael, because he never has any facts. You use facts. This guy is completely out of
control. Well, I don't want to get into a debate with you about him and I. When I started in radio the first night, he was an established local talk show host, and he threw every stumbling block in my way. And when I'd come in the studio, he'd say, here come the sheets, you know, to refer to me like I was a Ku Klux Klan member. I wanted to break the glass and attack him, and a very nice guy cautioned me not to do it. He said, don't respond to him. He said to me, this guy, you're gonna whiz right past him. He saw the talent. And he knew this guy was a man that nobody liked. Nobody would talk to him in that radio station. Not only was he an evil man, he was also a man that nobody would go in the studio after him. Allegedly, I heard, because it stank so much.
Yeah. He's a
That's what I was told. He had personal habits that indicated a diseased mind. I mean, that was what I was told was going on there. They had to build the guy his own studio. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. It was like a zoo cage.
Michael, the man is a cesspool, and this conviction only proved it. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Well, I think we've covered this. If you want to chime in on this, go ahead. I'd like to know what you think. Do you think it's appropriate for a man convicted of dealing in child pornography in the way he has, meaning disseminating it, sending a picture, whatever you want to say, how could the judge permit the sentencing to go on until August so he can go to a child's graduation and to attend the daughter's rowing competition? Something is wrong. I smell politics. I smell the hands of Barbara Boxer, who he used to work for. Many of you don't know it because the news people here are so disgusting that they won't even report the linkage to that vile creature from Brooklyn. Sacramento, Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael, I really appreciate you covering this issue. This is very important. I live not far from Lake Natomas, where the rowing event's going to be, and I've been there many times. And mm-hmm. It's a very family-friendly environment. a lot of little kids, you know, the kids' siblings are there, and it's definitely not the place for him to go. He should not show up.
Well, here's another question. What does it tell you about a man's sense of reality? He pleads guilty to sending a single child pornographic image of children engaged in pornography, that he would even want to attend his daughter's rowing competition. What does that say to you about him?
Very sick man.
But he's not thinking of his daughter, is he?
He's very narcissistic.
But wait a minute. Hold on now. This is what worries me. Why would the daughter want him there unless she doesn't think he did anything wrong? And if a child doesn't think her father did anything wrong, doesn't that indicate something is wrong with the child's thinking? That she has no, let's say her morality was warped by the man.
Very true, very true. Yeah, and unfortunately, whatever present we have next, this could very well be a glimpse of what's to come, and might absolutely be looked upon as normal.
Well, the ACLU has been arguing for years to lower the age of consent with children to 12, number one. Number two, they are the ones who made certain that libraries could continue to disseminate child pornography. They said it was not freedom of the press or whatever, that it violated the First Amendment to go into a library and to block child pornography. That's because perverts run the libraries and they want children in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
I can't take this. I have to back off here. I have to back off. Mike, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please.
I think that the judge and both the judge and the guy who created this situation, they both have to be put in jail for the longest time, whatever life they have. Because yesterday or today it happened to another child, to somebody else's child. But tomorrow it can happen to my child or to your child or to the child that of the any of the listeners who is listening right now. So to protect the children, not only the guy who does this on the radio or on his website, but the judge who finds him not guilty or does not want to put him in jail, he is supporting him.
That's yes, he's enabling it. There's no question that Judge Vaughn Walker is an enabler by permitting this man not to have to be sentenced immediately. This judge has become an enabler of all child pornographers, by the way. That's what you're saying. He's indicating with a wink and a nod, you'll get away with it in front of me. There's a judge appointed by George Bush Sr. I'll be back.
Savage.
Discusses group sex he had at an infamous porn theater in San Mateo. Then, nearly an hour into the conversation, he brings up photographs. I love trading pictures. Sex fairy answers, and why haven't I gotten any pics, slave? Send me some. Ward sends several pictures, one of a woman and two children. Ward describes her as a mother in her late 30s. She's topless. He says the naked boy is 14, that the girl wearing clothes is 12. They're all touching in a sexual way. Sex fairy writes, BRB, be right back. A half hour later, she's on the phone with police reporting Bernie Ward for child porn.
Mm. Well, I think we've covered the waterfront on this. You know, I wouldn't say forget it. I would say remember it. And understand that there's a triple-tiered political legal system in this country. And if you're connected in any, it's like the ex-Soviet Union. I know many of my listeners are former Soviets. They know what protexia is. The same exact thing exists in this country, and it's shocking when it applies to a case like this. Protexia meant that you knew somebody higher up in the government who would step in and help you. It's always been true. I understand that. But there was usually an area that certain politicians wouldn't touch. You would think that an area like this, trading in child pornography, is an area that a senator wouldn't go near because it would backfire on her. But when you have a compliant or supine press, as we do in America, that is in bed, both literally and physically, with the politicians, literally and physically in bed with the liberal establishment everywhere, they protect each other. And consequently, the press has not only lost its validity to most Americans, it's lost its reason to be, its raison d'être. And that is why they can get away with this. That is why a story is not covered the way I've just covered it, with all of the ins and outs. There are many questions. Why would the judge permit the sentencing to be delayed to August? Number two, why would they permit this man to attend the child's graduation? Number three, why would they permit him to attend his daughter's rowing competition? Number four, who stepped in for him? That's the story.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. The phone number you well know, there are no lines open, because this is turning into a pretty interesting topic. Although this creature is not well known outside of the San Francisco area, and he's been off the air for quite a while, when you have a liberal who has spewed so much hatred against family values for so many years, pleading guilty to child porn charges, that should be major news across the country, and it won't be. And that is because the midstream media, as you well know, is just that. KNEW, Marvin, welcome to the Savage Nation. Marvin, are you there? No, Marvin's gone. Okay. 1-800-449-8255. We can talk about other topics. Eureka, California. Lance, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for having your show exactly as advertised. Psychological nudity. So just prepare for the idea that Bernie Ward may have been a victim, and this will be trotted out as the mitigating factor in this sad, sad story.
What was he victimized by?
Well, I'm just suggesting that maybe he was a molestation victim when he was young.
Oh. The priests molested him, in other words, and he couldn't help himself.
Well, you know, whatever it is, I don't know. I'm just saying be prepared for that particular mitigating.
Yes, I hear what you're saying. Mitigating circumstances. It was the church that did it to him. Pretty good. Very good. Yeah, well, that's why they call them mouthpieces, lawyers, mouthpieces. KNEW, San Francisco. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Tom. Michael, I was going to point out that on Bernie's old station that they were claiming he was a victim here.
Of what?
Well, you know, he was just conducting his own investigation, similar to the old Abscam congressman.
Yeah, but that false defense was thrown out by everybody. Nobody believed that for a number of reasons. If you're investigating child pornography, you go to the police first, or the FBI as a journalist, and you say, I want to do an investigation of pornography, and I'm going to go online, and I need you to know that so there's no confusion. Everyone knows it's a ploy.
There's no question about that. What my point is that's their excuse. And they're claiming he's a poor victim, not a criminal. And by the way...
Yeah, well, look, a lawyer is supposed to be a mouthpiece and invent stuff for a client.
I'm talking about...
Here, listen to this clip, where his agent said that whatever he did was inadvertent. Listen to clip 15. Play it now.
Ward's criminal defense and civil attorneys declined to be interviewed on camera today, but they repeated what they've said from the beginning, that Ward was doing research for a book.
Whatever he did was inadvertent. It was something that was, a violation maybe of the letter of the law, but certainly, the one thing Bernie is not is a child pornographer. He's not a child molester.
They also now say Ward was role-playing during the online chats with Sex Fairy, that all details of his sexual activity were 100% false. The former KGO radio host is facing two counts, distribution of child pornography, one count, receipt of child porn.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing is for sure. She never represented me as a book agent or any other way, nor will I ever have anyone like that represent me. Whatever he did was inadvertent. You mean he hit the wrong key on his computer? Please, lady. Please. That's something that perhaps only people in San Francisco would believe. Anyway, let's go back to something bigger here, all right? What, do we got the Sean Bell protest in New York? I'm not interested, you know. If you want street thugs determining the outcome of trials, move to Zimbabwe. I mean, that kind of behavior is accepted in Zimbabwe. Play clip three for a minute. I need a break right now, some kind of breaker, a stinger, a little stinger with the egg song. Play the eggs in the morning and, you know, you guys on glue there or what? You can't hit the button.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
If I smoked, I'd smoke right now, but since I don't smoke, I can't.
As long as I get my kiss.
Now play the egghead line.
We cannot win with eggheads and African Americans.
I like mine with a hug.
Go on.
Dark or light.
crazy country.
The world's all right.
Now play the egghead line.
We cannot win with eggheads and African Americans.
My love in him.
Or the rest of my day is positively mayhem.
We cannot win with eggheads and African Americans.
How do you like?
Now we'll move to something else, which is bizarre. And I played it earlier, but I'm going to play it again, Sam. And I'm telling you, there's something wrong with it. John McCain, look, I don't dislike the guy, but I don't trust him at all. One, he's a politician, and two, I don't like his politics. But when he's on this guy's show, a guy who was off the air while the ugly guy with a brain was on strike, and the ugly guy with a brain is now working again, so the comedian is back on the air, and McCain, who probably has many ugly people with brains writing for him, puts him on the show, and he talks about Chairman Mao in a positive way. Now, this is a man who almost paid the ultimate price because of Chairman Mao. Here's a man who was tortured, his shoulders broken by Chairman Mao's minions in Vietnam. Listen to clip 19.
For a while there, I was reminded of the words of Chairman Mao, who said, it's always darkest before it's totally black. You remember that? Remember Chairman Mao's
words? I remember getting that in one of my fortune cookies as well.
You remember Chairman Mao's works? You mean we're supposed to remember Chairman Mao's works, John? You were a Navy pilot. You're supposed to say that Chairman Mao killed 60 million people and never even refer to him except in the proper context. Something's wrong with the picture. Which is why in my book, The Political Zoo, which, of course, look, no one talks about it because the book is too poignant. The Political Zoo, by the way, sold over 100,000, so don't think I'm embarrassed by it. I'm not. I just don't want to promote my book over and over, my fourth book in the sequence. The Political Zoo, I took animal characters and applied them to people, and I gave them a Latinized name. It was for an educated audience, I'll admit. It was not for the average barbarian out there. I'll tell you, that's why it didn't sell as well. As, let's say, the leprechaun wrapping himself in a flag and then filling the pages with white pages with an occasional black dot on it. But in the book, The Political Zoo, the animal that I applied to John McCain was Stockholmus blemishi. Again, you have to understand the joke. I mean, Stockholmus blemishi is funny, but then you have to have a modicum of education to know what a Latinized name is. Why Stockholmus? Because it stood for the Stockholm Syndrome. Then you have to know what the Stockholm Syndrome is. Why blemishi? Why? It was point... But the point is, okay, went over the heads, but it was good. Why did I say that John McCain may have been suffering from the Stockholm Syndrome? Play the clip again.
For a while there, I was reminded of the words of Chairman Mao, who said, it's always darkest before it's totally black. You remember that? Remember Chairman Mao's words?
I remember getting that in one of my
All right, turn off the guy who needs the ugly guy with brains to give him his lines. But McCain is an issue. McCain is our only issue. You know, Obama and Hillary are known quantities. He's known because he's unknown, and she's known because she is known. So therefore, they're not issues. But the strange one here is McCain. This guy was finished last year. We had another candidate who was totally viable, who was knocked out of the box by the Republican establishment because he might have won. And that's what worries me here. Something is so wrong with this picture. So under John McCain on page 227, Stockholmus blemishi, and I'll tell you what I wrote about him. And tell me if you disagree. Many of you will get mad at me, but it's the price I have to pay for my sarcasm, my cynicism, my desire to alert and alert you. It's really satire. Many of you don't even know what satire is because it doesn't exist anymore. You confuse irony with satire. Anyone could be ironic. Irony is what you'd see on Sex and the City. You know, the chick with pointy shoes making an ironic comment, which passes for satire. It's not satire. It's mere irony, which is, you know, a sophomore's game. But let me read you what John Dryden wrote in 1681. The true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction, and he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease, okay? So now in that context, I write John McCain is the turncoat mole. And here's what I wrote about him. The turncoat mole is a crafty creature that is quick to switch pack allegiances without any observable reason to do so. It regularly eats from the lower ends of the food chain, but constantly harasses any other animal choosing to do so. In 2000, the turncoat mole was all but exterminated from the national scene when it tried to root itself into the hostile habitat of South Carolina. It retreated to Arizona and is now making gestures to go national once again. This was written last year, 2 years ago. The turncoat mole sometimes hunts in tandem with the Senate snakes, with at least a few moles being eaten for dinner in exchange for looking bipartisan. Perhaps its chief natural weakness is that it is blind to how its burrowing undermines the principles of the party pack. Okay? And I still don't understand why he won't come on the show. Just because I called him the turncoat mole and said that he's not to be trusted, I don't understand why he wouldn't come on the show. But I could see why he'd go on the Lecherous Leprechaunus' show. Lecherous Leprechaunus is the top mammal in the Fox News pundit cage. The American porcupine is a large terrestrial rodent, well protected by its prickly exterior. When challenged, it erects its quills, swings its stout tail, and threatens to release the barbed tips into challenger's skin. Known for its grunting or groaning delivery, the porcupine is active mainly at night and is found occasionally on televisions in the sagebrush plains of the West. Also, according to legal filings that were settled, the American porcupine will occasionally try to find cable station staff willing to play games like fetch the loofah as part of its bizarre mating ritual. Okay, I can understand him doing that, but I can't understand that just because I was satirical, he should hold a grudge against me. After all, he's known to be a very nice guy. The odd man out. I'm the odd man out. I saw a movie last night on TV that was gripping. The Wind That Whistles Through the... No, that's from The Soprano. No, that's all. It was something about Ireland, 1920, when the British were oppressing the Irish. It was so well done, it was shocking. It was so well done, it was engaging. It was so well done that it made me furious at the British for how they mistreated the Irish. It shows a group of guys in Ireland, 1920. Remember, the World War One is over. They're playing rugby. And like 10, 12 armed Britishers come into the town and humiliate them. And they humiliate them in front of their women and children in the village, saying, tell us your name, blah, 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 blah. And one of the men tells him his name in Gaelic. And they take him in a room, tie him to a post, and beat him to death. He's a young man. And this is allegedly the beginning of the IRA in Ireland, a guerrilla group that fought the British colonialists. The oppression was overwhelming, what they did to these poor people. But the story was so well done, and it was so well directed, and it was so well filmed, it made you want to reach out into the screen and help these people. And I forget the name of the movie, The Wind That Whistles Through the Barley Field. I don't know. Can someone look it up for me? I don't know what channel it was on. One of the cable channels last night. I'll look it up. And when I do, I'll come back and advise it highly, because it'll give you some sense of injustice in the world. But it really changes your whole opinion of many, many issues going on around the globe today. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'll make it a quick and passing, then we'll go back to the story of the liberal talk show host and the odd and extremely bizarre sentencing hearing today before Judge Vaughn Walker. The Wind That Shakes the Barley is the name of this movie I'm telling you about. Set in Ireland, 1920. Workers from the field and from the country unite to form volunteer guerrilla armies in Ireland to face the ruthless black and tan squads that were shipped from Britain to block Ireland's bid for independence. And these black and tans were prisoners, taken out of prisons. They were just purely evil guys, and they were very brutal to the Irish. And the interesting part to me was, well, there were many interesting parts, was that the Irish had no guns. They had no weapons whatsoever, while the British sent in these ex-prisoners armed to the teeth so they can do anything they wanted to the poor Irish. You just be very frightened by any politician who wants to seize your weapons. You'll wind up exactly like that. You'll be just a laughingstock. Your women will be raped. They'll burn your house down, and you won't be able to do a thing about it. It really is a shocking story. So the story is apparently based upon every fact in the story that was dramatized was based upon the history of the Irish Rebellion. And I don't want to go into it, but the movie is called The Wind That Shakes the Barley. It was stunningly well done, the acting, the directing, the lighting. It is hard to understand because of the high Irish accent, the heavy Irish accent, which almost needed subtitles in some places, by the way. And I don't know, maybe you'll teach your children something about what went on there. So if you think that oppression only goes on, let us say, in other countries, and it never occurred to Europeans, well, you all saw Braveheart, so you know what was done to the Scots, you know. So I suppose that was the granddaddy predecessor of this type of story of colonial oppression. But let's get back to our problems here in America with McCain, the Manchurian candidate. Vin, welcome to the Savage Nation, calling from New York City on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mike. During the late 40s, 50s, and 60s, we often heard about the psychological re-education camps in the communist bloc nations. And during the mid-50s, Frank Sinatra starred in a movie called The Manchurian Candidate.
Of course, I understand that.
And potentially, you know, we could, and most recently in the last 5 years, the movie was remade again. So one doesn't know, or, you know, in these camps.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm feeling something bizarre about McCain when he talks about Chairman Mao on a comedian show last night in a sort of positive manner. Doesn't that strike you as odd from a man who was tortured by Chairman Mao's minions, the Vietnamese?
I agree with what you say. It's uncanny. It's for a person to flip.
It was uncanny. In other words, if you're tortured by a military, you're telling me X number of decades later you talk in glowing terms or in a positive manner about the chief architect of that torture?
Today, you know, with psychological re-education, they have learned so much over the time. Even our CIA has used
that. You see, look, my show finds things like this and will turn them up into a blimp for people to think about, because it's the little things that can give away a politician faster than the big things. The big things are rubbish. That's something that the guys on television will talk about like it has meaning and it doesn't. It's the little things that may tell us more about the candidate than the big things.
Very true, Mike. Very true.
Thank you. So apparently I'm not the only one who heard that. Just play it again. 19. Play it.
For a while there, I was reminded of the words of Chairman Mao, who said, it's always darkness before it's totally black. You remember that? Remember Chairman Mao's words?
I remember getting that.
Hold it. Why is that funny? Why would, when you say Chairman Mao, would an audience laugh on a liberal comedian show? What is Chairman Mao, a funny thing? 60 million Chinese were killed or starved to death under this monster. Well, what's the laughter all about? It just shows you the ignorance of the American mind, number one. But that's not the issue. The issue is John McCain even referring to Mao in a positive way. Well, forget about it. WOR, Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation from New York City.
Dr. Savage, I read The Political Zoo, and let me tell you, one of the best books I've ever picked up in my life.
Thank you.
And I don't even know who John McCain is. I'm joking. I know who he is. But when I refer to him to anybody, when I talk about this disaster that will be the November election, I refer to him as Stockholmish Blemishai, and they look at me like I have six heads. And I said, the man suffers from Stockholm Syndrome. He's against waterboarding. What kind of man that was tortured for 5 years would be against waterboarding? I mean, this book was ingenious.
Okay, that's all you have to say. You know, I agree with you. I called him the turncoat mole. And you know what's sad about this book is that the enemies of McCain are going to pick up my book because every one of the scandals attached to him is in here. But it shows you I'm an equal opportunity analyst here. I didn't just go after Democrats. You should understand this by now. I am an independent. Independence means exactly that. It means, by God, looking at things as they are. It doesn't matter what the party may be. I think I'm going to have Irish food tonight. But I'm not hungry. That's the problem. And Irish food is generally heavy. I like the women in the Irish movies. I wish it had a little bit more of the dancing or something. They didn't have enough women. No, not enough romance in it. That's why the movie didn't go anywhere, The Wind That Shakes the Barley. They should have. I mean, it would have trivialized what this was about. Okay, but you got to understand, a movie is a dramatic, enterprise, and men go to the movies to be entertained also. And you could have worked in a little bit of love. There was no love in it. KNEW, Marvin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I'd just like to one more little snippet here on the Mr. Ward, his old station. With concern, on the round table, is talking about maybe continuing his radio show while in prison. What do you think?
But who said that?
The old station, the newscasters, and lawyer.
The lawyer said he could run a show from jail?
they asked with concern, do you think he can run a show from while he's in prison? Continue on.
I doubt that it would be legal. I doubt that a prison would permit this. If they do, it would be a very, very strange accommodation. Let's put it to you that way. Although with the Americans with Disabilities Act, if they were to declare this kind of act, the act of a person who's handicapped in some way, they may have to accommodate him and let him run a show from prison. I don't know.
They think you may go to a country.
After all, with a secret senator behind the whole deal, anything is possible. There's also the issue of the publicly traded company involved. I don't think they permit this, truthfully. I think it's hype.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Discusses group sex he had at an infamous porn theater in San Mateo. Then, nearly an hour into the conversation, he brings up photographs. I love trading pictures. Sex Fairy answers, and why haven't I gotten any pics, slave? Send me some. Ward sends several pictures, one of a woman and two children. Ward describes her as a mother in her late 30s. She's topless. He says the naked boy is 14, that the girl wearing clothes is 12. They're all touching in a sexual way. Sex Fairy writes, BRB, be right back. A half hour later, she's on the phone with police, reporting Bernie Ward for child porn.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Boiled and
well, super liberal talker pleads guilty to child porn charge today, and in an astonishing slap in the face of public sentiment, the judge delayed the sentencing until August so that the super liberal talker who pled guilty to child porn charge can attend his son's high school graduation. Wait, it gets worse. If you like that, I'll give you another one. I'll throw in something worse. And also the super liberal talker who has pled guilty to child porn charge can also attend his daughter's rowing competition. So play. Look, the guy got caught with his cookies in the finger jar. There's no question about it. And that's not a pretty story to begin with. But the judge's actions smack of political interference, number one. We do know that this man worked for Barbara Boxer for many years. There's no question in my mind that some puppet master pulled the strings on this case. And we, the people, are sitting here in stunned silence and shock because had this been you, let's say you're a high school coach and God forbid you got caught doing a thing like this. God forbid you should do it, but let's say you got caught. You telling me that you'd be treated with this kind of dignity? You telling me they'd let you have keep your children at home while the plea was going on all these years? You're telling me Child Protective Services wouldn't have investigated to see if your children had not been harmed in some way, whether physically or psychologically? You're telling me they'd let you go to your child's graduation, particularly a girl's rowing match? If you actually look at the transcripts of what this man imagined, his daughter was involved, his son was involved. What, something's wrong with the whole picture. So I ask you out there, the American people, how you feel today knowing that a man like this who, you know, every day was on the radio, he attacked family values as being hokum, attacked the church while saying he was God-fearing, viciously attacked the police in San Francisco, hated the military, used to work for Boxer, by the way, as a defense analyst, incidentally. You may not know that. And incidentally, I will not use the word incidentally again. 1-800-449-8255. If you want to see what the chats were, and if you have the stomach for it, go to michaelsavage.com. On the top, you'll see another crazy statement. Paul Begala, whoever he is, apparently he once worked for the Clintons. I don't know who he is, really. He said, we can't win with eggheads and African Americans. Amazing how this race is becoming somewhat about race. Portland, Oregon, KXL Country. Tony, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hi, yes. Throw the book at him, I say, Mike. For one reason.
I can't throw the book at him. The judge even said he can go to his child's graduations and events. The judge didn't. The judge had the right to sentence him today. He pled guilty. It was a plea bargain. The normal course of events is the judge then gives the sentence right then and there. No, they're going to delay it till August. They figure we'll forget it by then.
And that's the cruel
Thanks
world.
Thanks for the call. Atzel. KNEW, San Francisco. Jack, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. What sort of odds would you place on Ward's lawyers suing the federal prison system once he's in there to provide, you know, to pay for his liposuction and his sex reassignment surgery and his dental work and his internet access, like, you know, the whole gamut?
Well, they don't have to sue. In California, they automatically get that. You don't think he's going to become Bernice, do you, Bernice Ward in prison?
If you read that stuff, I think he's going to like being manhandled in prison.
Well, I read the stuff, and it looks like he might like being manhandled in prison.
Yeah.
It looks like he went to men's theaters to be manhandled.
Yeah, my neighbor's a parole officer, and he says the guys who scare him most are the ones who tell him the best sex I ever had was in prison.
Well, I won't even comment on that. I haven't eaten dinner yet. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Chicago, Illinois. Suzanne, welcome. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
First, Michael, I know you hear this all the time, but I normally lived in Alaska, and I'd listen to you up there. I came to Chicago. I could not find you anywhere on the radio, and I finally found you.
I'm on WIND.
No.
But go ahead. Quickly, what's on your mind about this pervert story?
20 years, I have a stepdaughter who has said that her father sexually molested her. She has gone to court.
All right, but Suzanne, please, let's make it short. I don't have a lot of time. I don't mean to be rude to you. You're a great listener. Give me the punchline.
Anyway, she has went as far as getting him arrested, but when it came all down to it, she was lying. Okay,
but this has nothing to do with this case because he admitted to it today. He pled guilty to one charge of transmitting an image of children. That's all. And if I keep this up, I won't be able to eat dinner. And I do want to eat dinner. In about a minute, I have a great former Green Beret on the show, an interview I did earlier. The guy is a former Green Beret, and he's going to tell you about Iraq. San Diego, Don, go ahead. Please welcome. You got 1 minute. Fire away.
Yeah, this definitely speaks of some sort of political favoritism, because since he's already pleaded guilty and he's only awaiting sentencing, would he not then be considered a child sex offender? And here in California, subject to the same restrictions as every other sex offender, therefore he wouldn't be allowed anywhere.
Absolutely. Near. Well, that's the funny part here. Once he pled guilty, the sentence automatically requires he be a registered sex offender, and he's the Megan's Law applies to him. And so, therefore, it makes no sense. The judge is out of bounds here. Judge Vaughn Walker is out of bounds. There's no question this is a political deal, and the oddest part is that the judge was appointed by George Bush's father. Do you know that?
Yes, yes. And you know,
okay, you can say liberal all you want. They're all the same at a certain point. I'll be back.
Savage.
Michael Young is an American author, independent reporter, and blogger, and former Green Beret. He's been embedded on numerous occasions with American and British troops in Iraq. He has spent more time embedded with U.S. combat forces in Iraq than any journalist in the world. His new book is Moment of Truth in Iraq. Mr. Young, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be back in the United States.
Well, how long have you been embedded with troops in Iraq?
Well, I've spent about a little less than 2 years with combat forces in Iraq. I first went there in December of 2004, spent most of 2005, and then I went to Afghanistan for a shorter period. Then I went back to Iraq in late 2006, stayed most of 2007, and then I just got back after a two-month trip. I mean, it's said that I've spent more time with combat forces than any other writer or journalist in the war, and I tend to believe that. I don't meet anybody that's actually spent more. So I've really taken an inventory of the battlefields, whether it's with the British down in Basra or Maison province, or out with the Marines in Anbar, American Army in Baghdad and Diyala province, Salah Din up in Nineveh province as well. I've really taken a big inventory of the war.
What made you want to write the book?
Well, actually, I had no intention of going to the war in the beginning. I was kind of a latecomer. I lost a couple of friends there, one of my old Special Forces friends. I was in the Army myself. Was killed on March 30th, 2004. His name was Richard Ferguson. He was killed in Samara. The next day, a high school friend, ex-Navy SEAL named Scott Helvenston, was killed in Fallujah. He was one of the Blackwater contractors who was murdered and strung up on the bridge. I went to their funerals in Colorado and Florida. And many of the military people were saying, you should go to the war. You're a writer. And I kept saying, nah, I'm not going to go to the war. But then, you know, Abu Ghraib photos broke that month in April of 2004. And then through the year, another friend of mine that I went to high school with, Lieutenant Colonel Rodney Morris, he was then at that point a lieutenant colonel. He was in the 1st Infantry Division in Tikrit, Iraq. Rodney would call me up or email from Iraq constantly and say, hey, you know, why don't you come over to Iraq and write the story? And I kept saying, I'm not going to do it. So love talking with you, Rodney, but I'm not coming to the war. But by November of 2004, with Operation Phantom Fury, when we attacked Fallujah the second time, I realized we were in trouble. And so I called Rodney or emailed him and said, you know, I'm ready to come to Iraq now if the offer still stands. And so I went there in December of 2004 and have been a serious fixture ever since. So I didn't decide immediately to write the book, but I began with a blog, and then it, you know, morphed into many other things, and finally the book.
Why don't we hear about everyday things our soldiers are doing in Iraq?
I think there's a number of reasons. Some of the reasons are just simply that most writers do not spend enough time in Iraq to develop the context and actually explain to you what's going on. I mean, you really have to spend a long time. 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 months is just not enough. I mean, you really have to go down there and say, I'm going to spend a year here or more. And so that's one reason. You know, and it's a very dangerous war for journalists, the most dangerous in history, actually. Journalists are constantly being wounded and killed. So that's, I think, is one reason. Another is this is a counterinsurgency. It's the most complex form of warfare that there is. Most people do not understand the intricacies of counterinsurgency. I was in Special Forces, and we specialized in part in counterinsurgency. So even when I first set foot on the ground there, I had an idea of what was going on. I knew what to watch for and what to listen for and what questions to ask simply because of my background. So there's a learning curve there for journalists who are not cognizant of the issues that are involved in counterinsurgency.
Well, from what you've seen, do you think the surge is working?
Absolutely. I mean, the surge, not just the surge, but there was some other things that happened pre-surge, actually. But, you know, in Anbar, for instance, the Anbar Awakening began to happen in 2006 when the tribes began to revolt against Al-Qaeda and turn toward us. That was extremely helpful. And then when General Petraeus took command in early 2007 and brought in more troops, and not just, it wasn't just a matter of bringing in more troops. You had to use those troops differently. They pushed them out into COPs, or what they call combat outposts, which were extremely effective. We had soldiers then living out among the people in their neighborhoods where they would be 24-7 doing foot patrols, having tea, that kind of thing. And, you know, when you open a COP, it's amazing. You start seeing information flow the very first day. Every time I've seen a COP open, you'll see, you know, we've got almost 100 actually in Baghdad. You'll see information start to flow that day. It's very effective. And information is what we need. If we know where the bad guys are, there's no problem. We can take them down, take them out, take them to prison, whatever. We just need to know where they're at. And so you have to win over the people and show them that you're there to stay, because many of the Iraqis, we've set a bad precedent at times. We've come into places like Talafer up in Nineveh province. You know, we came in early on. Many Iraqis cooperated with us, and then we left because we didn't have enough troops, and we went to other places, and then those people were killed, you know? And so they've seen this happen over and over. They don't want to cooperate with us unless they know we're going to stay. So we have to set the conditions for success, meaning the Iraqis have to know we are there for the long haul. We are there serious about their success.
We hear from the radical left that our troops are occupiers. How do the Iraqi people see us?
Well, in the beginning, I think many of them did think that we were coming to steal the oil, but at this point, that's not even a question they ever bring up anymore. And it's very clear that we're not there to steal their oil, or we would have just taken over the oil fields, and that would have been that. Or better yet, just take Kuwait. But we haven't done that. You know, you can prove to somebody that you're a bad guy in about 1 minute, but it takes a long time to prove that you're a good guy. And by 2005 and 6 and 7, it was becoming clear to the Iraqis that we were the good guys. But it took a long time, because in 2003 and 4, you know, the invasion started in March 2003. Many Iraqis did not know why we were there. They, you know, many did think we were coming to steal the oil, but it's become clear to them now that we really do want the Iraqis to become one of the responsible nations on earth and not a rogue state that they've been.
How would you describe our soldiers in Iraq?
They're incredible. They're very agile. I mean, the combat soldiers in particular, when you see those soldiers out there, you know, the way they conduct fighting is fierce. I mean, you really wouldn't want to face these guys in combat. And I don't mean just because they have superior weapons. I mean because they are superior fighters and very committed. But at the same time, for instance, they love Iraqi children. The more fighting a soldier has seen or a Marine has seen, for some reason they tend to embrace the kids even more. And so they really get along well with the Iraqi kids, and they're very likable kids, usually, until you give them too much candy, then they become really serious brats.
Well, like most kids on a sugar high.
But mostly they're really great kids, and so these bonds have formed, and you can see that the American soldiers are committed to success in Iraq.
Well, what is the most important thing we should know about our troops?
You know, the one image I would offer would be the one that's on the cover of my book, Moment of Truth in Iraq. I shot that photo on May 2nd, 2005, in Mosul after a suicide car bomb. The car bomber could have waited a couple of blocks to attack our people. Instead, he chose to attack right through a group of Iraqi kids who were out waving at the soldiers, and soldiers were throwing candy, and killed one boy outright. And the girl that's on the cover, her name is Farah. She was about four. She had run out waving, and long story short, I mean, Mark Beeger, who's in the photo with her, was rushing her to the hospital, but she unfortunately died. But you can see the savagery of our enemies, Al-Qaeda in particular, and you can see the big heart of the American soldiers risking their lives to save Iraqi lives. I've seen it over and over and over, and at times they've actually died. One night, Ben Morton, who was a soldier in the same unit, died because they did not throw flashbang grenades into a building that there were insurgents in there, and went into the building, and they were afraid. They didn't want to throw flashbangs or grenades because they thought there were kids inside, and there actually were. But they went inside, and Ben got killed. He was shot. And so these kinds of things, you know, Ben gave his life, you know, basically, you know, by using less force than he could have to try to save Iraqi lives. I see tremendous success occurring with the Iraqi army in particular. They've really improved since 2005. You can see improvement throughout the divisions. Some divisions are improving faster than others, but you can see that we are making progress. I'm very hopeful for Iraq. These are people that are serious about education. The University of Mosul, for instance, is about the size of the University of Michigan. So there's a lot to work with over there, and we're making progress.
Michael Young, great work, and thanks for being on The Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope as soon as I get back to Iraq, please, let's do it again.
Savage. Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez is a former United States Army general who served as commander of coalition ground forces in Iraq from 03 to 04. He was the highest-ranking Hispanic in the United States Army when he retired on November 1, 2006, which culminated 33 years of Army service. He's joining us today on The Savage Nation to talk about his new book, Wiser in Battle, which is a first-hand account of his time as commander of coalition forces in Iraq. General Sanchez, welcome to The Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Why did you write this book?
This was a very difficult decision, Michael. It was a need and a duty that I felt to be able to capture the lessons and the challenges that we had encountered during my time commanding our forces in Iraq. Up to this point, we have not done a very good job as a military and as a nation in capturing those lessons, and I believe they are vital and absolutely crucial for the future political and military leaders of our country to be able to understand what happened to us as a country. And we have to be willing to accept what we have done, and it's the totality of political and military decisions that drive the outcome of a war, and I've tried to capture some of that in this book.
Well, the war seemed to go unbelievably well to begin with, and then seemed to stall. What was the turning point from the start to where we are now?
Well, you know, I agree with you that the war went exceptionally well and probably the best offensive of any military in history. Unfortunately, I believe that we become a victim of our success, that tremendous success that we have in destroying Saddam's army, and then also, to an extent, a victim of the history that has preceded us up to that point, where we've been able as a nation to commit limited amounts of resources and accomplish missions. And the list is long. It's Haiti and Panama and Kosovo and Bosnia and Grenada, and it goes on for the previous 10 to 15 years. So we are pretty much reinforcing what we have experienced, that we can go in with very limited effort and pull out of a situation and leave behind some sort of stability. And then this is also reinforced by the fact that we embrace the notion that we're going to be treated as liberators, and we're going to find an Iraqi government and hand over responsibility, and then we can leave. And in fact, by 1 May, we have issued the orders to withdraw the forces from the country and get us down to 30,000 by the end of August. The real effect that we have not really understood, I believe, as a country, of the 1 May message is that it causes us, because we believe it's over, it causes us in Washington, both politically and militarily, all of our leaders, turn away from the war. It's a pretty strong statement, but I believe that we abandon our soldiers as we go back to business as usual.
Well, who's really running the war, the generals or the politicians?
Well, it's a combination, as war is an extension of politics, and there are political decisions that are being made, but if you're talking about the actual application of our political and diplomatic and economic and military power, we have a fractured situation. What you have when Ambassador Bremer comes in, he's responsible for reestablishing the governments. He's responsible for reconciliation and engagement. He's responsible for jobs and rebuilding businesses, the economic element of power. And then the nation has a responsibility to apply our diplomacy to try to bring the countries in the region to bear and to help us restabilize Iraq. And the military is responsible for security. You know, one of the things that doesn't happen is that when we're rebuilding security forces, Army and police, the military is told very explicitly that we're not to have a hand in it, and that it's to be done strictly by Ambassador Bremer's organization. So it's a very fractured command and control. Now, the military is in direct support of Ambassador Bremer, and we, in fact, provide him hundreds of people so that he can do his planning and try to divide his direction out of the green zone. But he doesn't have the manpower, the communications, and the reach out into the country that he needs. And it's not provided by our nation to a large extent for the whole time we're there.
How big a problem was created when the debathification effort began?
Well, what I've stated is that there are three decisions that really impact on the course of the war. And these happen in about a 45 to 60-day period after 1 May, while Washington is back to business as usual. The first one is debathification. The impact of that order is just amazingly extensive and thorough. It completely eliminates all of the governing capacity, all the bureaucracies, all the technocrats, all of the teachers, university professors, everybody that understands how to run basic public services. All those people now have no job. It's not so much the concept of debathification that's a problem, because I believed that it was necessary to eliminate the top four tiers of Ba'ath Party members. But when we go and implement it as draconian as it is implemented, where every single Ba'ath Party member is eliminated, it becomes an infeasible solution, and it is never really implemented. That's what creates this huge void in political security capacities from the Iraqi side. The second decision is the disbanding of the Army. When we disband the Army, we disenfranchise over 400,000 Iraqi military members. And we couple that with the fact that we do not want to pay them their pensions. Very quickly, this turns into a security problem for us. Eventually, we do pay them, and that eases the situation. But the more important decision is that we're not going to bring back the Iraqi Army, that we're going to build a professional force over 3 to 5 years and only to a level of about 40,000 to 45,000. We're not going to build chains of command. We're just going to build battalions and small unit leadership. And we all know that they will not fight for American leadership, that they need their own leadership. And this is the same for the police. That decision is what really is the crux of the problem and the negative impact that it has on the situation, not just the fact that we disband the Army. It's not bringing them back and not rapidly rebuilding them. The third decision that ensures that we're going to stay there for an extended period of time is the decision that we make to stop the removal of the forces. General Franks, in mid-April, had ordered the withdrawal of the forces and getting us down to about 30,000. But we very quickly realized that we're still fighting a war, that there's an insurgency going on, and that we need to keep all the forces in place. And the order is issued the first week of July to stop that redeployment, and that nobody's going to leave unless we have a replacement. And this sends chaos throughout the military establishment because there is no plan to replace those forces. We were already planning victory parades back in the United States for these forces. And in fact, they're leaving the country, and we have units that are already in Kuwait by the time I assume command. It's the totality of those three decisions that ensure that we're going to stay there for an extended period of time, and Washington fails to really understand the implications of that.
The feeling in the media was that Abu Ghraib was just a standard operating procedure on how we treat our prisoners during wartime.
Yeah, it wasn't, I wouldn't call it standard operating procedure. What I would call it is, in fact, what happens to us at Abu Ghraib is a mixture of confusing activities. You have the conventional forces, the forces that I command, that have been ordered since June to operate under the Geneva Conventions. And those are the controls that we're trying to impose on my forces. But then you also have the CIA and the special operating forces under their own chains of command with their own rules operating in the country. And that's where the confusion occurs, because they also operate inside of Abu Ghraib. In fact, the MPs that are pictured, they are punishing detainees because none of those detainees were scheduled or ever interrogated. That is a punishment that is being imposed on them because they had rioted and had almost shot one of the military policemen. So there's a mixture of things that are occurring in there. And the memorandums that I issue in September and October have been held up as the really critical documents that open up the universe of interrogation approaches, when in fact those memorandums are constraining it, because there are no existing constraints on interrogation approaches in any of the operations that are being conducted. And in fact, the legal reviews and the investigations that are conducted on those two memorandums reinforce and validate that with the safeguards and with the oversight mechanisms, that all of these procedures that are within the Geneva Conventions, if applied in that fashion, they would have prevented the abuses. Now, are mistakes made? Absolutely. From the time that we launched into this war, there are abuses that are going on. And in fact, we investigate and try and actually convict soldiers that have been abusing prisoners. And these investigations go on the entire time that we are fighting. And it continues to this day, as we all know.
Well, do you think that the surge is working?
You know, that's a good question. I think the surge, given the security situation that had deteriorated to the point that it was a year ago, it was necessary for us to apply significant military power in order to be able to reestablish some level of control on that situation. You know, I have spoken out against the surge, but it was not against the fact that we were executing a military surge. It was against the fact that we have still failed to surge our political, our diplomatic, and our economic power to complement the tremendous job that our military has been doing, and to take advantage of the windows of opportunity that we have provided repeatedly for political and economic progress to be made and for reconciliation to occur. And until we do that, we will not win.
So the problem here is the politicians behind the scenes, eh?
See, absolutely. It has always been. Look, when we go to war, it's the totality of the power that a nation has and how it applies it in order to achieve victory. And all we have to do is look back in our history, where we've repeatedly proven that by applying diplomatic pressure, by, you know, especially when we completely eliminate a regime, going in and rebuilding jobs, rebuilding businesses, and providing jobs, and providing security, and providing some sort of reconciliation amongst the groups, and eliminating the bad guys, all of that is critical to long-term stability and standing up a country again. You know, it became a lot more complex for us when we transferred sovereignty on the 28th of June of 2004, because now the real progress in providing jobs, basic services, reconciliation, all of that responsibility was now in the hands of a sovereign country, the government of Iraq. And we no longer control that. What we control, and it was by design, we control the ability to unilaterally conduct military action, and that's what we continue to rely on.
General Sanchez, thank you very much for being on the Savage Nation and for your service to the country.
Michael, thank you very much, and I deeply appreciate this opportunity to talk about the facts and what is in Wise Room Battle. Savage.
Go back from General Sanchez, who I interviewed earlier, to the astonishing story coming out of the San Francisco Bay Area, which you have to read on michaelsavage.com. And we have a real treat for those of you who've come to love Bernice Ward over these years. We have a picture that has just surfaced from local ABC affiliate of the young Bernice when he left the priesthood. We have a picture of Bernice as a young priest. And the reporter, Dan Noyes, says this. He said, I explored the conditions under which Bernie Ward left the priesthood. He says, Father Bernie played a central role in his on-air persona, especially on his Sunday morning program. I confirmed two complaints against Ward for sexual misconduct when he was a 27-year-old priest. The two alleged victims were 16- and 17-year-old students at Santa Rosa's Ursuline High School, where Ward taught. His lawyer says he was cleared of all allegations and left the priesthood on his own. Okay, sure. And that's right, and Dwayne Garrett committed suicide. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Go to michaelsavage.com. Now, look, this is a national story for two reasons. The reason it is a national story is because it is not a national story. Did you hear what I just said? Here you have a super liberal talker who admits today to child porn. That's after his mouthpiece said that he was only doing a book, and his agent said he was only doing a book on pornography, and it was an accident. Now all of a sudden he admits to child porn. He concedes to distributing explicit images of children. That's a polite way of saying he was looking at children's pictures in sex. Now the headline says, super liberal talker pleads guilty to child porn charge. Here is the bizarre point. The judge, Vaughn Walker, appointed by so-called conservative George Bush Sr., did the astonishing and unexpected. In other words, he pled guilty. Normally what happens when you plead guilty with a plea bargain, the judge says, here's the sentence, bang, and you go to jail. You begin serving immediately. Strangely enough, the judge agreed to permit the super liberal talker who pled guilty to the child porn charge to be sentenced in August for the following reasons, so that he could attend his son's high school graduation and that he could attend his daughter's rowing competition. Now, of course, they threw in that he's got medical needs, that he's a diabetic, boo-hoo, and he needs a certain machine to sleep at night. Yeah, right. Okay, we all need a certain machine to sleep at night. But they have those machines in prison. Trust me, they have the machines in prison. Do you think it was appropriate for the judge to permit this man to attend his daughter's rowing competition and to attend his son's graduation? Yes or no? Phone number at the Savage Nation is 1-800-449-8255. No, this is no longer a local show. It hasn't been for, since the year 2000. And, of course, the libs out here don't acknowledge my great success for obvious reasons. I don't care whether they do or not. They can't take away reality. They can take it away from their own brain. But I can't imagine that liberals would be on this man's side at this point. And I can't believe that there are too many liberals, real liberals. I don't mean the psycho extremists. I mean the actual liberals who would be sympathetic to this guy in any way. But maybe I'm mistaken. I could be mistaken. I do know that liberalism is a mental disorder, and it's an extreme. It's actually an incurable one and dangerous for children and other living things. Would you want your daughter to attend a rowing competition with this man sitting in the stands? I don't know whether the plea agreement permitted him to take pictures at the rowing competition. It could be that his lawyer is that good. But look, the story is that it's not a national story. And the secondary story is which national politician intervened in this case, if any? Which national politician intervened in this case, if any? And made the sentencing so bizarre. You know, this guy, according to what I'm reading, could face up to 20 years in prison with a minimum of 5 years a charge, a fine, rather, of of $250,000, according to what we're getting from Dan Noyes of ABC News. It says the deal only goes so far. It merely allows Ward to drop two of the three counts. He still could face up to 20 years in prison. Listen, and the minimum sentence allowed under federal guidelines is 5 years. You want my guess, and I hope I'm wrong? They're taking this time to try to shop it to one of the national Democrat politicians to change that as well. The judge granted one defense request, which is that he agreed not to accept Ward's plea until the sentencing date on August 28th. Otherwise, Ward would have been taken into custody today, but there's another element. Had he been taken into custody today, he would have been have to be designated as a child, designated a sexual offender, and also subject to Megan's Law. But there's a more complete Ward story that just came out a second ago. Ward complaints go back to priesthood, according to Dan Noyes. Just came to us. We're putting it up on michaelsavage.com with his priest picture. It says, well, there's so much more in here. The shock here is that the judge agreed to hold off on accepting Ward's plea until his sentencing in August. That's a shocker. It's an absolute shocker. Now, it's a story that should be a national story. It should be all over the media. But because he's not a conservative tapping an undercover detective's foot in a stall, it will not be seen. It will not be seen, it will not be heard. They're covering for him. But we have all the details for you. And the local team has pieced together the whole story of him as a young priest. And Dan Noy says, you told me that you believe he's a predator. You believe that, according to a father he spoke to. And a former student says, quote, yes, definitely, unquote. And the person who said, look, it's a disgusting story. She remembers when a young hip priest arrived, and we don't mean that he had two hips like everyone else. He was considered cool. You know what? You know about priests who are cool, don't you? Watch out for any religious figure who's seen as young and cool. You know what that usually means. It's sort of a Rasputin event. He was very funny and fun-loving and probably the most popular priest on campus. Well, look, now he's gotten caught with his cookies in the finger jar, finally. But Ward at that time taught religion at both schools, coached the football team. All right, guys, get out of that pileup. Reaches into the pileup. You know, all right, guys, come on, get off each other there. Come on, get in the locker room. Get those towels out. He gained a reputation for flirting with teenage girls, even though he was 27 and a priest. Oh. In the spring of 78, it apparently went beyond flirtation. Well, you can read all about it tonight on the Savage website, michaelsavage.com, and you can watch it tonight in the local news if you're in the area. This is an amazing story. Why? Because it's not an amazing story to the people in the media. It shows you how biased they are in the midstream media. Why do I call them midstream media? Think urologist. Savage.